And welcome back to Oshkosh. It's been a full year since the traffic jam has been on. We lost Snap Roll Sam. He's actually still with us, but he can't remember where the radio station is, and so he's working his way over here. So it's just Weasel tonight, but we got a good show. Tonight we're going to talk about the EAA Air Venture Cup race, which finished yesterday. And joining me in the studio is Mike Patey, one of the competitors. And this is your first race, wasn't it?
This is my first race at EAA.
Excellent. Well, welcome to Oshkosh. And the reason I dragged you into the studio tonight was that you brought one of the coolest airplanes that I've seen at Oshkosh in quite some time. And it's one that you built, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. So it's parked over here next to the big checkered pylons, and it says Turbulence on the side. Looks a little bit like a Lancer Legacy, but something's not quite right about it. Tell us a little bit about the airplane.
Well, it's based on a Lancer Legacy, and I got a crazy idea as I've built a bunch of Legacies. We worked up through 720, a 780 supercharged Lycoming Legacy, and it never seems to be enough, so this time we put a turbine on it, a PT6 turbine on the front of a Legacy.
And so now you kind of changed the shape of the tail, and you got there's a fin behind and it looks like a camera back there.
Yeah, okay. So the tail, I knew I couldn't handle the horsepower a PT6 can put out, and the torque creates a pretty negative effect on takeoff. So we added 31% larger tail, reinforced the entire aircraft, spinner to tail with a couple hundred pounds more carbon fiber, structural load improvements all the way throughout that we could bore ourselves to death on. On top of the plane, it looks like a shark's fin, and it's actually four devices in one. What most people notice right away is the camera going out the back. That's used for racing in the Sport Air Racing League. I race a dozen times a year. But it keeps an eye on the racers behind me, but it's also was part of the dive flutter testing to keep an eye on, and you can see flutter with an onset of vibration. But also inside that fin, I encapsulated all the other devices I need that I didn't want drag on the airplane. So the forward section of it in one fin is an ELT. The middle section is the GPS antenna. The next behind that is a comm antenna, and behind that is a rear-facing camera. And they all come up with about the same drag coefficient of just one regular comm antenna.
Oh, that's pretty cool. It's a great idea. I saw that when it was one of the first things I noticed about the airplane was that I'm like, that's pretty intuitive that you guys did that. Now, you're no stranger to home building. This was not your...
A lot of people here at EAA, I cannot get enough of airplanes. I cannot pick my favorite one. And so I've come to the realization I have no favorite. I love all of them. So I've built a bunch. I've been through RV6s, RV10s, Comp Air 8s, turboprops, on-floats, bush planes. I've done a lot of planes from scratch builds. So I think I'm up to about 10 builds at this point.
Wow. So like there's a whole bunch of people that just finishing one airplane is a major life, and it is a major accomplishment to finish an airplane. But it takes them 20, 30 years to do that. So what's the secret to building 10? Do they get easier after the first five?
No, I think you make mistakes on all of them, and if you learn from them and build enough, you'll get better and better, I suppose. I've definitely made my share of, well, that didn't work right. But I think for me, the secret I learned to get a plane done is when I dive into a project, I just decide that no matter what, every day I will have something done on my plane. And it can be one of those days that there's nothing you want to do. You'd rather do anything than pick up a tool and go work on that plane. But my goal is once I start a plane, I will do something. And even if that means I show up at the airport and pick up one tool and mount one antenna, and it takes me 10 minutes, I will get something done on that plane every day. And if I have more time, what if I find I end up staying longer and longer every time, and now it's an addiction. I'm at the airport constantly.
Well, that's probably the key to success for getting a lot of projects done. From the point where you came up with the concept of doing a turbine legacy to the first flight, how long did that project take you?
Well, the concept was just rattling around in my mind as I was building a 780 cubic inch supercharged Lancer Legacy. I was near the end of that and already designing. Now, when I'm finished with this, I think I want a Pratt & Whitney PT6 Legacy. So the design process was going on while I was finishing my my supercharged Legacy, and I learned a lot about controllability under that horsepower range in that one that kind of gave me all the changes I wanted to make on the next one. And once I finished the other Legacy and actually started on the new turbine Legacy, it was about a 4.5 month build start to finish.
Okay, I think there's like home builders all like that are listening to this that just like had heart attacks or something like that, that you designed, you know, built a you know, because the Legacy is not a simple airplane, and then, you know, you got all the systems, retractable gear, you had to design a new, you know, redesign the entire airframe to accommodate the horsepower. So do you like not sleep for the entire
yeah,
build process?
Actually, there is a unique benefit I have. I think, I don't know if I was born with it or I am a workaholic, and something happened early in my early years where I just don't need sleep. I literally only need 3 hours consistently back to back to back. So I needed something to fill my time when I go home, put the wife and kids to bed, and tuck them in. And I got 5 or 6 more hours before I'm ready to go to bed, and I'm up hours before them. And so building airplanes, no one calls me during those hours. I'm wide awake, and I get a lot done. So that's been a benefit to getting it done. And I think the first Legacies didn't go nearly that fast. But I tell you what, when you've done it a few times, and quite frankly, I didn't open the build book on my Lancer Legacy once, this build. And that's the advantage, is so much of the time is planning, predicting, reading, double-checking. And when you're on, I don't know if it's my sixth Lancer Legacy, and you've modified just about every part on it, you suddenly find that everything goes really, really fast just by understanding it. So that's really what happened.
Well, that's kind of cool. So now, when you flew the airplane for the first time, were there, you know, you had an expectation for how the airplane was going to perform. Was there anything that really surprised you the first time you flew it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was really disappointed. Yeah, what surprised me, that I had huge excitement on some areas and then another that was not what was anticipated. First flight was 46 minutes, and that first flight's always an adrenaline rush and an interesting event by itself, especially when you have a turbine and you didn't have anyone to go off of. It's the first one ever made, Turbine Legacy. And that 46 minutes was absolutely perfect. It's the first flight. Usually I come down with pages of notes written on my pad, and I came down with none. I decaled the plane, checked it out, and recaled it and put fuel in and went up again with nothing to change. Now, what I did find that absolutely did not work was I couldn't make torque, maximum torque, and we believe that might be whether that's just me undersizing a propeller something else. We think that's what it is. We're still going to try and figure that out. I just finished the plane, but the plane's it's going fast, and I'm happy about it, but I think I need to do a little work or have another propeller made for me, and I'm sure I can get that done. And then I was hitting speeds that this airplane doesn't normally hit, and so the other anomaly I found, I didn't find on the first flight but was several flights later, was when you push up the speed, the gear door was sucking itself out, and even though it was set up appropriately, it needed more pressure because of the speeds I was making.
Wow, and then in the Air Venture Cup, I don't remember exactly, but you were like 320-something?
Like 320 miles an hour. The plane, I went up to 15,500 feet. Wasn't the right choice. I made a mistake there as well, but still worked out okay. I ended up finding about a 35 to 40 knot headwind at 15,000 feet. And I still came out at 317 miles an hour, I think, so I feel pretty good. It's an honest 293-knot airplane, 92-93 if you do a four-way check on your calibration system, and it's about 293. I think I have a lot of improvements to make and a lot of things I can fix, and hopefully we'll pick up a few knots.
That sounds good. Well, and you mentioned, you know, the choice of altitude, and people always look at the cross-country race as sort of a kind of an odd event because it's terrible for spectators, but it's great for proving the performance of the airplane. But as we saw in the results from the air raid, there were you know, people finishing like within, I think you yourself beat somebody by like 3 minutes or 4 minutes, something like that. And a lot of that comes from the, it's like sailboat racing where you have the strategy and the planning depending on, you know, are you going to do a cruise climb, or are you going to climb really fast and then get up to take advantage of the altitude? And that's something that's really taken off with, you know, this race has been going on for 18 years, but in the past 6 or 8 years, they've had the Sport Air Racing League, and those races are popping up all over the country. And it's a great way to promote pilot proficiency and flight planning and really getting to know your airplane.
Oh, I got to tell you, and anyone listening out there, look up the Sport Air Racing League. There's events all over the country, and you will learn so much, and it's such a fun group. It is aviation at its best, and you get to plan wins and strategy, and it's a very safe, fun environment. It's an absolute blast, and I go out about every month and race something. And, I mean, I even went out there recently. I didn't have any of the planes going I was working on. And so I hopped in a factory stock Cirrus, and I went and raced it just to build some points. And I had a blast finishing right in the rear end of the pack, and it was a absolute hoot. Loved it.
That's one of the things I think is a lot of fun about cross-country racing is it doesn't really matter whether you're flying a Citation Jet or a Cessna 150. You know, just about anything can be competitive because they have so many classes, and that makes it a lot of fun as well.
Oh, they have a class for everybody. We have someone that shows up and they'll race a J3 Cub. And I tell you what, the race is about you and the winds and your knowledge of aviation and about the experience with other fellow aviators. It is the time of a life. It is a blast. Everybody can get into it. Anybody can join. And so if you're listening and you just love to fly and you want to hang out with other fellow aviators, get into it. Go out and find a local race near you and call them up. There's nothing really to do. You just take your plane, go out and play and have a good time.
Exactly. And it's sportairrace.org is the website if you want to go and get some more information. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Mike Patey, and you're listening to EAA Radio.